And welcome now to the Midday for a Friday. I'm Norman Gilliland, once again in our Buck studio, which means live music for the midday. And our performers today, Evgeny Kutik and pianist Christopher Taylor. Evgeny Kutik being a Russian-American violinist who is performing. Well, first, welcome both of you to the Midday.
Thank you.
Welcome back in the case of Mr. Taylor. And you're going to be performing at Viterbo shortly.
That's right. Tomorrow evening, I'm playing Shostakovich's Violin Concerto No. 1 with the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra.
And that's where exactly?
La Crosse.
I mean, at Viterbo in La Crosse.
Oh, where? I'm not.
Well, I hope you find out before
yeah,
tomorrow.
Someone will tell me.
I hope so. I do hope so. I hate to have violinists wandering around loose.
Right.
Well, it's wonderful, though, that you've come over here to perform for us and give us another example of your artistry.
Thank you.
And the two of you have decided, I think, is the way it worked out, to play one of the really most wonderful sonatas out there, written by a man who you would think would have been in the sunset of his career at the age of 63, César Franck, almost a recluse from a musical standpoint for most of his life, but then a couple of great works, of course, the Symphony in D minor, and this from 1886, considered one of the greatest of all violin sonatas, and he spun it out, as I say, in what you would have thought would have been the twilight of his career. Do you remember the first time you heard it, Evgeny?
Oh, that's a tough question. I was quite young, and I remember playing it. I remember playing it for the first time when I was probably like 13 or 14. So I've definitely kind of lived with this piece a bit, but I don't remember my first exact time playing, hearing it. But I knew from an early age that this piece kind of resonated with me for some reason. It felt very special.
It strikes me as being, and I know we're not going to be hearing the first movement today. But it strikes me as being particularly modern, almost bluesy, the way it opens. Notes unexpected in 1886, I'm guessing.
Yeah, the opening is actually very tough. It's very improvisational and simple. And I think that the purpose of the first movement is to set up the rest of the sonata, quite frankly. So
I never thought about that.
It's a challenge playing the first movement alone because you can stand to make too much of it. I think it's like a very interesting harmonic walk through color, and then we go into the other parts of the movements. You know, each movement is almost like a phase in life. That's the way I think of it.
Well, from a composer who would have been able to look back on those phases. And there's a wonderful story, in retrospect at least. I'm not sure how wonderful it was at the time. He actually wrote this, Franck did, as a wedding present.
That's
for
right.
Eugène Ysaÿe, one of the great violinists of the time.
Yep.
And its first performance was at the wedding.
Yes, I believe you're right. Yeah, I believe you're right.
And I think on that occasion, I assume that Ysaÿe played it at his own wedding. I'm not sure how that part of it worked out. But then the first public performance was quite interesting, too, in that it took place in Brussels in December in an art museum. And right away, you have to ask, so what's wrong with this picture? Well, because the art museum had a rule, understandably, against artificial illumination. And they're starting late afternoon in Brussels in December. And very quickly realized it was getting too dark to play.
Oh, that's fascinating. You know what? That's fascinating. I didn't realize that.
So on that occasion, and I forget now who I think the violinist was Ysaÿe, and I forget who the pianist was. But anyway, it got too dark to see the score. And so after a while, they thought, well, let's just soldier on. And they played the last two movements from memory.
Right. Wow.
Okay, for the very first performance of this sonata in A. So make sure there's plenty of light wherever you're playing there in La Crosse. I'm sure there will be. Well, these two movements we're going to hear, and we will hear them one right after the other without a break, and it'll take us right down to the quiz question at 12:30. What about these two movements that we're going to hear?
Each movement for me in this piece represents a sort of phase. So I think the opening first movement is a sort of very impressionistic kind of almost youth-like exploratory view of the world, and then you get into the second movement that we're going to play, which is very energetic, like a young adolescence. It has this sort of drive in the piano part, and these 16th notes that continue all throughout, and then it kind of, the movement almost moves into a feeling of two, where this violin spins out a very passionate improvisational melody. And then we move on to the third movement, which is frankly my favorite part of this piece. And the third movement to me definitely represents reflection, maybe some kind of wisdom, looking back a little bit. And to me, it's always resonated, I don't know, for whatever reason, but there's always been some kind of philosophy for me in the third movement. So I love that very much. And then we go on to the fourth movement, which is a celebration. And I think the fourth movement was specifically intended as the wedding.
That would make sense. Yeah, right. Okay, so the two movements we're going to be hearing represent then this kind of youthful wonder at the world, you might say, and then this retrospective looking back.
Right.
All right, so the second and third movements of César Franck's Violin Sonata with Evgeny Kutik, violin, and Christopher Taylor at the piano.
Thank you. Thank you.
The middle two movements of one of the great violin sonatas, the Sonata in A by Cesar Franck, is played live during the midday today by Evgeny Kutik, the violinist, and pianist Christopher Taylor. And you do hear or encounter some of the DNA of that first movement in the second movement, don't you? That same kind of figuration that returns.
That's right. I should have mentioned that the whole sonata is cyclical. So things he introduces in the beginning will appear all throughout, and everything kind of interconnects.
The work of a composer who spent much of his life in, relative obscurity as an organist and writing works for organ, but definitely emerged in his late years. Now, Evgeny, you're headquartered in Boston.
Yes.
And what do you do there?
I live in Boston.
And, yeah, that's our start.
I lived and practiced in Boston, but mainly I'm on the road soloing concertos, recitals, chamber music across the world, a lot in the United States. Lots of different concerts. This week, like I mentioned, I'm playing Shostakovich concerto tomorrow night. And then on Tuesday, I'm flying to Virginia for the Tuesday evening concert series to do a recital there in Charlottesville. So I'm actually very excited to go there to do Mendelssohn Sonata, Franck Sonata, Bloch, several other works that escape me right now. And lots of other stuff coming up. I have a Barber Concerto in the Berkshires. I'm playing Mozart Concerto with the Rochester Philharmonic in New York March or February or something. Yeah,
that's a lot of music to turn around.
It is. It's very challenging, and that's what I do in Boston. I try to turn it around my fingers when I'm there.
Well, congratulations for a lively career. And now we mentioned Ernst Bloch and this famous piece of his. And what is the story behind Nigun, Evgeny?
Nigun is the second movement of a three-set suite called Baal Shem. So Baal Shem Tov was in Jewish mysticism a sort of mystical figure. I think Bloch composed the first piece is called Vidui, which is called Confession. The second piece is Nigun, and the third piece is Simchas Torah, which is celebration in the law, technically, is what he meant. And he lumped the three pieces together and called them Baal Shem. After this mystical figure, he dedicated them to the memory of his mother. And they both very much, you know, represent three distinct things in Jewish life, and that's the subtitle: three pictures of actually Hasidic life.
Hasidic life, and, yeah. And Nigun specifically is what then?
Nigun is improvisation, and so you know, I think a lot about. I'm Jewish, and I grew up going to a fair amount of services when I was younger, and I always like to think of the Hazan or the cantor, you know, there's a sort of intonation that they do with their tone when they're improvising various liturgical things, and I think that's possibly what he had in mind. I don't know. I can't ask him. But
it's up to us to determine for ourselves, I suppose.
Yeah.
But Nigun from Baal Shem by Ernst Bloch. Nigun from Balsham by Ernest Bloch, the violinist, performing in our Buck studio this afternoon. Evgeny Kutik and the pianist for the occasion, Christopher Taylor. Now, just a word about your violin, Evgeny. So often we hear about, 300-year-old violins, and they certainly make a great sound, but those aren't the only violins that make great sound. Yours does, too, and it's a good deal younger.
It is, quote-unquote, younger. It was made in 1915 in Mantua, Italy, and by Stefano Scarampella, considered one of the great modern, again, quote-unquote, Italian makers. And I love it very much. I've had it for a number of years now, and it's really developed with age for the better, so I'm very happy. My bow is a Dominique Picot, made in France, probably mid 19th century. So I'm very happy with my equipment.
I would say yes, that you have melded very nicely, and yes. Today is a good example of that.
Thank you.
And thanks for stopping by our studio
today
and coming over. He's going to be performing tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night,
La Crosse Symphony, Shostakovich Violin Concerto.
That's right.